And welcome to The Life of an Entrepreneur. I'm Jan McCarthy with Entrepreneurial Voice, and we are broadcasting live from SkidRowStudios.com, Real Radio on the Internet, and we're here every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and we'd love to hear from you. We would love to hear from you if you want to give us a call and talk to me or my guest, who I'll introduce to you in just a moment. The number is 1-800-893-9562. And we're here to talk about what it's like in the life of an entrepreneur and to share business tips and how people got started and all of those kind of things. So hope we'll hear from you. And today I am interviewing Chris Cahill of Psychic Every Day. And welcome, Chris.
Why, thank you. Thank you, Jan. It's so nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So you're a veteran here because you have your own radio show as well. Yes. But it's very exciting to interview you because you're also an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And so why don't you tell us a little bit, Psychic Every Day? That sounds exciting. It sounds wonderful. Tell us who you are and what it is that you actually do.
All right, great. I have a, well, my company, Psychic Every Day, or it's just kind of like how I do business as, is really me being a psychic. I'm a professional full-time clairvoyant. I'm a psychic teacher. I'm a healer. I'm a writer. I have a radio show. I have, a blog, a website. You know, I'm writing books. It just keeps spreading. It's really fun. I teach classes in meditation, and I teach people how to work with energy and how to heal themselves. And I've been doing this kind of work for about 14 years. But when I moved to Los Angeles 7 years ago, I started looking at how do I create this business out here? How do I set it up? So it really is officially 2010. I decided I needed to full time go into this. And before then, I'd been both doing my art and doing, I'm a painter, and doing my giving readings, but I hadn't fully jumped in and committed, kind of like what we were talking about earlier with, like, if you're going to change your hair color, like, you got to commit. And that was it. I needed to commit. And as soon as I committed to it and said, that's it, I'm putting all of my eggs in this basket. This is where I want to create a career, where I want to create a business. Boom, things started rolling.
So let's back up. Let's back up way, way, way back to like when you were a little girl. And so what were you thinking? When I grow up, I'm going to be
a fashion designer. And I was one for a while. I had my own fashion company in my right after I graduated from art school. I graduated from the School of the Art Institute of Chicago in 1982. And I studied fashion and fabric design and sculpture, soft sculpture, and everything with textiles and dyeing fabrics. And I love that stuff. I mean, I'd go back and do that again in a heartbeat, but not as a business.
That's fun.
But I did it for years. And costume design, I designed dance costumes. I did theater. I worked with a company or a place in Chicago called the Annoyance Theater, a theater company, which is wonderful, very big company, and they're wonderful. I love them. So I did tons of clothing. I had reps all over the country. I had, I had a kids line of accessories I designed called Confetti Kids.
Oh, fun.
That was really fun. So I did that for years, but I never made a lot of money at it, but it worked my butt off and I learned a lot. It was a great thing to do and I was very happy to be self-employed.
So you always sort of had this purpose and thinking that this is what I'm going to do. You went to school for it. You really had a direction. And were you working for others or it became your own company? Did you start out working for others or
yes.
Or did you just start out immediately saying, I got it?
I started working for others. I learned, I worked for Chicago City Ballet for a little while. I built costumes. I learned how to do certain things, mm-hmm. get the technical stuff, and then also the business end. I used to, when I was in my 20s, all through, you know, art school and also after I got out, I worked with all these other artists who, what we would do was we would create shows. Many of us were fashion designers, but some were accessory designers, some were other things. We would like go rent a space and we would set up our own craft and art shows.
Oh.
This is before people
Very innovative.
Yeah. We were doing this. We would send out, and this is what before email, we would get postcards printed and put labels on them and stamps and put them in the mail. We would buy advertising. We would put up, you know, we'd go around and flyer. And And we'd have our people, you know, our mailing list. So much easier now with email.
So for those who may not actually be viewing the show, Chris is actually still quite young. So anyway,
I was 10 years old at the time. Yeah.
That's right. So it still allowed you to be very innovative, and you said eventually I want to go out and do this on my own, and you did, and you created the Confetti Kids and things like that. So I think one of the things that I really recommend is that you don't have to you get a lot of information by you know, just training and learning and having someone else pay you to learn. So there's nothing wrong with going ahead and jumping out there and doing it on your own, and there'll still be plenty of lessons for you to learn. But it's a shortcut if you can actually find someone where you can kind of hone your skills and learn the trade specifically as well. So that's really helpful that you did that. Now,
I didn't have the confidence yet either. I mean, I needed to know that I did know what I was doing. That was part of it. I was building confidence.
Right. Like, how do I get reps, and how do I actually get contracts and have people hire me?
Yeah,
and give
or
me
buy
money.
My stuff.
And
how
buy
do
my
I get
stuff?
People to buy my stuff?
Right, exactly. So, but apparently, obviously, you have gifts, and you're using all of those gifts in the business that you have today. And I do want to kind of go on a journey of how you went from being a fashion designer to where you are today. But going back again when you were young, knowing that you wanted to be a fashion designer, or thinking that that's what you wanted to do when you grew up, you also obviously had the gifts that you have now of being able to, I assume, put yourself in a meditative state and recognizing that you had these psychic abilities and to be able to read people. When did you first discover that?
Actually, I didn't have a conscious awareness of it when I was in a young adult. You know, when I was in my 20s and 30s, it really wasn't until I hit my 30s that I started really getting interested in these abilities. I just didn't go there. I was an artist. I was creating. It was all about creating. I was constantly creating, designing, creating. But in the meantime, I was also... I was getting more and more hurt, or taking on more and more energy that now I know what I was doing. I was healing everybody. You know, I've talked about this with many people and on my show a lot too, but I was just sensitive to everybody's stuff, and I didn't have a conscious awareness of what it was I was doing. I was being who I am, which is somebody who's really aware of energy, but not in a conscious way.
So did you think you were unusual, or did you...
No.
You thought everybody had this kind of ability. Okay.
I felt responsible. It was a mess.
So that's really interesting. So tell us what your... When did you have this epiphany? When did you have this clarity that, oh my gosh, I have a gift and I can turn this around and I can help people and I could actually... Oh my gosh, make a business out of this.
Well, I first had the epiphany when I took a grounded meditation class called the Psychic Meditation Class at the school in Chicago called Envision, that is now Envision. It had a different name then, but that's the school that I went into. And I took this class. I'd met this woman from the school, and I liked her, and I liked the energy of the place, and it's a clairvoyant training school. And I went in and took this class, and I learned to ground. And when I learned to ground, I went, oh my God, this is like a whole game changer.
Right.
And all of a sudden I started becoming conscious and aware of energy. And that was the language and the awareness in the school was, you are energy and you take on stuff. And I started realizing it. And then I did the clairvoyant training. I went right into it. And as soon as I started sitting in these readings and doing this, I was like, oh, I've been doing this all along. And it became more and more and more fun, and also a little bit disturbing too, because when you start realizing what you've been doing,
right,
like, oh my gosh, I've been doing that, you know, I'm going to let that go and then become. And it was when I was a teacher at Envision. I was there as a teacher full time for 6 years before I moved out here. I started seeing more and more and more how I'd like to do my thing. I didn't know what that was yet, how I would create my business. I really liked teaching there, but I love teaching, and it became my passion. And when I moved out here is when I started creating those pictures of how I can turn this into this kind of a business. So I had to come out to LA and get myself grounded out here.
Yeah.
It took a while.
Yeah, well, it does.
It does.
I love LA, but it does. You got to find your space.
And it's not grounded like Chicago.
Well, it's pretty cold in Chicago right now,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I like it out here. I'm not complaining.
That's right. That's right. So after you created Confetti Kids, so where did you go from there? So you're in your early 20s still, or in your 20s, while you were doing all of the fashion designing and then you went off on your own. What was the next step in your career?
Confetti Kids, it came along at the same time as my first women's line called Bourgeois Rags.
Love these.
I know.
Where are they today?
I have some of the labels somewhere, but they're gone. And then I kind of moved through both of those and formed a brand new women's line called Lemmingware. And Lemmingware, like lemmings, it was all hand-dyed silk clothing. I loved it. I did that for years. I did well with that. I did that for years and found a niche with that. And then there was costume design and then theater design and all that stuff in there. But then I really wanted to paint. I mean, I'd gone all the way through art school and gotten a degree and not painted. You know, it was crazy, and it was a fear I had that I won't be any good and all this. So around that time, I started painting in the early 90s. I was done with fashion by the early 90s, and I started painting, and I started then creating shows.
Great.
You know? And I always showed my work everywhere. I sold thousands of paintings over those years, like about maybe 12, not thousands, maybe about 1,500 paintings.
That's a lot of paintings. That's a lot of time in the studio painting.
Little to big to...
Yeah. So I think that's great because sometimes people think, well, I'm doing this and it's successful or it pays the bills and to take that leap and or, you know, that jump and say, okay, well, I'm going to do what I've really been wanting to do all along. Were you frightened? Like, can I support myself?
Absolutely. I was terrified. And I had this conversation the other night with Nestor, too. It's like when you're painting, and if you've painted, you know this, that painting is fighting you. It's not the painting. It's your own stuff. And so I'd gone from working with people more to being in a studio by myself more. And that was really a different transition, a different, more, it's the kind of thing every entrepreneur, I think, gets. You know, if you're doing your thing on your own, you've got to deal with that.
Yeah, well, you've got to kind of feel, you've got to feel it out and see what works and what doesn't work. And
and
sometimes you don't know that you can work by yourself until you work by yourself. And you don't know that you can't until you try it. So so what do you mean the painting was fighting you? Because I took up painting about almost 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
So
what I found was as soon as it became a business, as soon as it became a thing where I was like, I was creating shows, I had deadlines, I was creating enough work, or I was getting commissions, or, you know, just needing to fill in were different places where I had my stuff hanging, it became more of a thing where there was more of a doubt. And so it's not like the painting was fighting me. The painting was perfectly fine all by itself. It wasn't doing anything bad. I was the one fighting me. And I had to learn how to create more peace. And that's in those years is when I learned how to meditate.
Okay.
As an artist, I learned how to meditate, and that was the class I told you about. And that changed my art. That actually changed my art, learning how to meditate and ground and work with energy. Everything became more about energy.
So you were practicing what you're doing now, that. You were painting. Mm-hmm. And so what was the next step?
The next step was as soon as I started teaching at Envision, and I actually became a full-time teacher there, I was still painting and doing my shows and teaching there, and I was actually getting paid to teach, and I was setting up my reading practice, you know, creating a client base of reading, my reading practice. But because I was part of the school, like everything I did was within that school.
Mm-hmm.
I did it kind of, you know, it was a great space. We were allowed to bring in, you know, use the space to do what we needed to do too. But then when it was time to move out here in 2006, I took all of that, brought it out here, started painting again out here, and then also really started building my practice out here. So and by 2010, I was ready to go full time.
Yeah. You'd started to build a bit of a client base here. Yep. And
I have clients all over the world now.
And it still incorporates your art and all of that. So that's great. What would you say would be a rookie mistake that you made early on, though?
Hmm. which one? One thing I have learned over the years, and I know it's from mistakes I made, is to really, I've become very good at communication. I've really become good at communication. But one of the, I mean, and if I do say so myself, and if I find I'm not doing something that way, then I'll try to correct it. But I have my newsletter. I don't spam people. I communicate. I've never done anything like that. But I'll really communicate, you know, sending a thank you or a hello, or rather than just assuming. Mm-hmm. A rookie mistake for me has always been assuming something.
Right.
And then I'm in judgment over it and I can't see it clearly.
That's, you know, that's really good information to impart. So when you created this business, even though you've been entrepreneurial all of your life, you started your clothing company and you had your art, did you always have it as an official business? All of those different businesses, did you have them as an official business? So
yes.
As a creative and not taking all the business classes in school, how did you have the confidence, or how did you find out what you needed to do to take it from being like a hobby to being an actual business?
Well, early on, my husband and I have had accountants, or, you know, an accountant who would do our taxes and all this. And my husband's, he's a filmmaker and he's been a producer and he's done all this stuff. So he's pretty good with those spreadsheets. And he would tell me, okay, you need to, you know, he would be the one telling me, because I'd say, okay, the tax time is hell. How do I deal with this better? You know, and I just was just not very organized about it for years. And I've become very organized. I have spreadsheets for everything now. But that was a thing, just like a trial and error. That was a rookie mistake, not keeping better track of things. I know there were, you know, different deductions and things I could have had that I didn't.
Right.
Because I just was careless. I was sloppy, you know, and now I don't do that anymore.
So it's very good advice to recommend that whenever you get started, just go ahead and set up those systems right away. Learn the different things that you need to do to keep track of what you're selling, what you're spending, where all that money's going.
Paying attention to it rather than resisting it. Because mm-hmm. we go into that fear mode where we don't pay attention to it, and then all of a sudden it creeps up and you're like, I got to deal with it anyway. Might as well be easier.
And we just hope it'll go away, and we put our head in the sand.
It'll go away.
Yeah. And I think I think for especially a lot of people who are creative, they do want to just kind of pretend that that part doesn't exist.
Yeah.
It's not to say that they can't do it, but typically that's not why they got in the business.
Right.
You know, they got into it because they wanted to be creative. And so, but you also have to take a look at those other things and that are required, that are mandatory, and figure out a way to make them happen so that it doesn't stress you out.
Yeah. And there was one more rookie mistake you just reminded me of when you were saying all that. Undercharging. I did that for years.
I'm glad you brought that up. So how did you transition from that, from not valuing yourself enough and being afraid that people wouldn't pay you what you desired to be paid or felt, you know, that you were actually worth, to turning the leaf and saying, I'm worth this and
the right
people will find me.
Well, and that's actually, I feel much prouder of myself now than I did back then, because I've actually done that out here, you know, more with, I gave myself a raise with my rate last fall for the first time in
five years. I love how you just said that. I gave myself a raise with my rate.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It wasn't a huge raise, but I was like, I have to give myself a raise. This is crazy. It's just, I'm not doing, I can still do specials from here from time to time. But one thing I've learned over the years is that if I don't value my work, then it's not going to be valued. I have a great story. There was one of my very first art shows I ever did in Chicago was in something called the Around the Coyote Art Festival. And it's this huge, you know, outdoor art festival, but actually not outdoor, in studio too. And the neighborhood Wicker Park, which is a pretty big, you know, it's been up and coming for many years, but now it's got there. It's already there. Used to be the place where Around the Coyote would be. And artists would just, you know, apply to be in these different studios. And you'd show up with your stuff wherever they told you to go. And you'd hang your work. And thousands of people would come trooping through all this, and you'd sell a lot of work if you want, you know, or just at least get it seen. And it was my first time, and I was very nervous. I was new at my craft in this way I was making paintings. And the first thing that I got was this woman who was in charge of the building I was in looked at my work. They'd stuck me in a basement in this room that was just kind of hideous with fluorescent lighting, with a guy who made glow-in-the-dark art, so he wanted to turn the lights off all the time.
Oh, my gosh.
It was like, you couldn't make this up. And she came and looked at my work, and she said, oh, and I heard her say under her breath, oh, it's a lot better than I thought. Like, they put me in the basement because she didn't think my work was going to be very good. So anyway, I had my prices up and all my stuff. Some guy came through, these two men, and one of them just looked so mad, and he came up to me and he said, you are not going to sell anything until you value your work. Because my prices were too low, in his opinion, and he had to rip me a new one.
Wow.
It was really funny.
Wow, you had some people looking out for you at that.
Yes. I thanked him. I said, thank you. Thinking he could have been nicer, but whatever. It really offended him.
Yeah.
And it was very funny. So I just kept raising, you know, little bits by little bits. And it took me a while, Jan. That's a hard one.
It is a hard one. It is. And I do know exactly what you're talking about, and especially with my art. And I think maybe like with my art, it's priced very appropriately. And part of me, being a new artist was like, well, maybe I shouldn't price it at that because I'm new. I don't have all of those credentials behind me where I've done 20 art shows or I've done this or I've done that. But then I thought, you know what? I don't really care if I sell it or not. I really like this painting. And so I have to make sure that I sell it for enough that it would be okay if I parted with it.
Yeah.
And I think that's how I wrap my head around being able to price my paintings at the price that I priced them at, is what was I willing to let them go for?
That's exactly what I used to say. What do I have to be given in order to let go of this painting?
Yeah.
Because there's some that I still wish I had not sold, I'd kept.
Yeah, yeah. And there's some that I have that I've priced like way up there.
Yes.
It's like, whoa, I bet I really like this.
And if somebody buys it, great.
Yeah, yeah. Then I would feel like, oh, okay, it's gone to a really good home or something. You know, they're going to really love it. I want to make sure they really love it. So
yeah.
I guess, you know, that's a tangible thing, and it isn't necessarily, you're not necessarily able to apply it across the board. So that's one way of being able to price it at that value. But I think turning it around and looking at what the market is getting for your services or for your products, and knowing that and believing and being authentic and true with that, is that you're not going to sell anything that's inferior.
Right.
You know, you're going to give the very best that you can possibly do. And yeah, that should give you confidence, you know. And you know, talking about value in women, I mean, you look at women who, like, even with a service, and they're not willing to charge a certain price, but yet they'll go out and easily pay someone else,
right,
to do something
and tip them.
And tip them. Yes, yes. And so whether it's for an attorney, or whether it's to a hairdresser or to whatever, they easily pay it and they don't question.
Yes.
That, and so being able to turn that around and apply it to yourselves. And so I think that's just an incredible business lesson that you just shared, and give somebody a little bit more confidence to say, I'm going to give myself a raise.
Yeah.
In my rates.
And we've got to remember too, I mean, especially if you are offering something you created, your paintings, no one else is going to create those.
Right, yeah.
They can't be
truly
made
original.
By anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
No one else gives a reading the way I do. Other people do it the way they do. It's not a competition. It's, you have a particular vibration. People will line up for it.
Yeah.
And you deserve to get paid for it.
Exactly. And you notice a lot of times too, people will say, well, we had to raise our prices on our products because shipping costs are more, or this is more. And really, you don't necessarily have to justify that.
Yeah.
You know, if people want it, they'll pay for it. And so think about what it's worth it to you to create, to produce, to do what it is that you're doing, and then take into account what the market will bear.
Wasn't it from the book that you were talking about, Choose Yourself, the example of the woman who, I'm wondering if I'm remembering this correctly, but the woman who was trying to price or to get this, move this turquoise jewelry out of her shop? Was that from, I just read this the other day. And I was reading three things at once, and one was that outline you sent me.
It's possible. My memory is not as good as it used to be. But for listeners who may be listening, I reviewed a book, Choosing Yourself, and wrote kind of a little book report on it, and Chris read it. So it could have been in there. What was the point of that?
Well, the point of it was that it was the author was talking about value. Mm-hmm. The value of something. And this woman, this jewelry was very, very beautiful, and it was not cheap stuff, but it wasn't moving in her shop. And so she was frustrated. She kept putting it in different locations. She wanted to just get it moving, get it out.
Yeah.
So she was going to be out of town for something, and she left a note for an employee saying, move it to here and cut it in half price. But it looked to the employee like double the price. The employee doubled the price and it all sold.
Fantastic.
I mean, there's a correct price point for everything.
Sure.
And that's the key, is finding it.
And also how much are you willing to, I don't remember that story in particular, but there was another one, I think, and it did come from that book. And just going back to what we're talking about, we'll move on to a different subject here in a minute, but also being willing to, don't price yourself out of the market either. Like, you got to be willing to kind of let things go sometimes. If you know what it is that you actually value, like, did she value more holding on to all of the turquoise, or did she value more getting rid of it?
Yeah.
And so that might be what you're referring to, because I think that was in the book, where if it's really more important for you to get rid of it, then go ahead and let it go.
Right.
If anyone wants to call in, we would love to hear from you. The number is 1-800-893-9562. You can call in, ask me a question, ask Chris a question. We're talking about lots of things, all entrepreneurial, and how you get through being an entrepreneur, the joys and the frustrations. So what is so joyful to you being an entrepreneur?
I get to be near my refrigerator and wear yoga pants all day.
And if that's not incentive enough.
Except when I have clients coming over. A lot of my clients I work with by phone or Skype, and then I just have to have some makeup on.
As long as it's from the waist up, right?
But I really love working for myself, because I work a lot of hours, but I'll rearrange my time so I get to do different things.
So how do you motivate yourself? Because, you know, like you said, you can do a lot by working out of your home or a private office. You don't always have maybe the deadlines, like someone's not telling you to be at work at 9 o'clock in the morning requiring you to work 60-hour weeks and all of those things. How do you motivate yourself to...
I look at my bank account.
And that is a good motivator, being hungry. Being hungry. You got to be hungry. Yeah.
I know how things work in my business to some degree, but I know that a lot of it too is... And I should just say this to my husband again this morning. I'm like, you know, when I feel good, when my energy's good, like when I'm really taking care of myself, my business grows. Yeah. It's just really connected for me. And I
Absolutely.
Think it is for a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
You know, I can't create if I don't feel good. And so I'm very motivated about creating. I love what I'm doing. So that's the first key. You know, I just at a certain point, I lost my motivation for creating an art career, because I realized I didn't care. I want to make art. I don't really care about the art world. I just got tired of the shenanigans. I got tired of, you know, feeling weird about that. I just thought, no, this is getting in the way of me creating. But what I do now, I'm so independent, but I can work with different people, but I'm still running my own thing. I'm kind of the one steering the boat. So I have to be motivated if I'm going to be getting the people in. You know, and I write, I do all these things that like help people see me. I read a lot of social media stuff, like how, not to follow every single little thing, but you know, like the marketing stuff we do, and mm-hmm. just to see like, what's a good way to work it? And I'm really easily approachable too.
Yes.
One thing I've learned, and I'm on Yelp, with my business, I can't even tell you the number of times when I'll call somebody back who's called me and left me a message who found me on Yelp, and they'll say, thank you for calling me back, as if no one calls them back, like other people don't.
No, other people don't. That's like the best business lesson out there. Call people back.
Call them back.
You know, email them back.
Today.
I agree. Yeah, like right now. I agree. I think that's a really huge thing that we can all do. And it's simple. It doesn't cost any money. It's a little bit of time, but it really goes into customer service. And just call. And I've heard that same thing. Oh, my God. Am I actually talking to you?
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. That we've gone so far that we're not taking that into account.
Yeah.
And recognizing how important it is.
You're right, customer service.
Yeah, it really comes into that. So,
yeah.
And I'm sure just even having that feedback is kind of a big motivator as well.
Yeah, it is.
When you were with any of the businesses that you started, did you sit down and do the whole big business plan?
Nope, never did. Never needed a business plan. I would look at what is my goal, like what is the thing I want to do? Mm-hmm. And I would just keep learning. I mean, I was always learning, just like you do and everyone, you know, we do. Like I constantly would be learning from other people in that business. Yeah. When I did fashion, all the fashion designers, it would pass different things on to, you know, each other in terms of information. And you could see who was doing really well and everybody would want to kind of do stuff with them.
Yeah,
you know, be in a show with them or whatever, because they had something on the ball.
It's kind of like when you're in school and you look at the one who's the, you know, they're making good grades and they're always raising their hand and they always know the answer. And then when they put you in teams, you know, it's like, oh, I want to be with that person.
I want to be with that person. They have the mojo, you know, they have that going.
Well, there's a lot to learn from people like that, whether it's the way they organize their daily list or you know what they're doing. There's a lot to learn from the people who are successful. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I always recommend that study other people and see what they're doing right, you know.
Absolutely.
So you don't have that particular business plan that women are so afraid of and actually
I'm sure. I have a picture. I actually do have a plan, but it's on a sheet of paper.
Great.
It's like on a card, and it looks like I have an umbrella. My umbrella is a Clairvoyant production.
Fantastic.
So that's so down the road there will be more production. But I love, love, love having a radio show. Like, it's actually changed my business plan because I didn't see that. That wasn't part of my plan. All of a sudden it came about, and I went, oh, I knew I wanted something like this.
And you have to be open to those kind of opportunities. And sometimes when you have that very rigid business plan, you never think outside the box. You just always constantly, well, that's all my plan, and this is what I've got to follow, and this is what I've projected, and this is all of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Do you ever sit down, though, and say, all right, so this is how much money I want to make per month, or this is how much money I want to make for the year?
Yes, all the time. I haven't reached those numbers yet.
Well, I say just keep jacking it up.
I am.
And what is that saying? Shoot for the moon, and if you miss, you'll land amongst the stars.
Exactly. So, I am reaching the numbers I wanted like a few years ago when I was first getting started and hardly making anything. You know.
Well, you've got to have that belief in yourself, and obviously you do, and you love what you're doing, and it's projected. I mean, it's one of the things that first attracted me to you is that, you know, you so embody and believe everything you do, in everything you do.
Yeah.
And that's important.
Thank you.
And, you know, for everybody to have that. And if you're not doing it, you don't believe in it, then don't be doing it.
Yeah. You know. People will know.
People will know.
If you don't have your spirit involved in what you're doing, people are going to know. There's just going to be something missing.
Absolutely. So that's
a bored,
real key takeaway for everybody is to be authentic with everything that you're doing.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that you won't still have to do some things you don't really want to, like the accounting or whatever.
Yes.
But being authentic with what you're doing and having that passion around what you're doing.
Yeah.
And not just thinking, making money is certainly very important. But not just thinking about how do I make money.
Yeah.
So
this for me was never about how do I make money. It was that, oh, I can make money doing this, but I want to do this. That's the key.
What was the hardest lesson you learned when you were in business?
The negative self-talk, like how to get out of it. You know, not to, you know, I always have this picture of riding a wave. Riding the wave. The wave is, you know, and it's good. Like when things are flowing and everything's coming in, and then all of a sudden there's no wave. Whammo. And it's just those cycles we hit.
Sure.
And I've had to learn over the years how to, and especially in the past couple of years, I've realized this is just the flow of what I do. And when the wave stops, it's not failure or that I'm not doing the thing right. It's that now it's the time to go, you know, take care of the other things. The stuff that when I'm in the middle of so much busyness with clients and new students and everything, I don't have the time to take care of, like some of the creating I need to do, the back end. So I've gotten much better at balancing that rather than freaking out.
And learning,
thinking, oh no, it's all going away. You know.
And learning to tell yourself that it's okay and you know, looking at the successes that you've had in the past.
Yeah. And planning different pictures, creating new pictures moving forward.
And I do love, I'm not one of those who sat down and did the big business plan either. I never really have. But, and I'm not saying that it's wrong to do that. And if you're trying to go and get funding, then certainly that's something you have to consider.
Yeah.
And it is very helpful for some if that's really, if that's the way they work best. So you kind of have to know yourself and what works for you. But I love the idea of having that kind of vision. So whether you have it on a piece of cardboard and you've pasted pictures, or whether you've got this permanent image in your mind or created a journal, or some people put it on their computer so that they see it every day, or, you know, just whatever it is that you're doing and using that can help you to continue to move forward. But we talked about success just a second ago, and how do you measure success?
You know, the way I'm measuring success these days is not about how much money I'm making. I mean, that's certainly a part of it for me. It's a success. I want a successful financial, you know, healthy financial thing in my business. Certainly,
sure.
That's important. But it's more about how happy I feel with what I'm doing. And also, do I have the time and the I don't know, the organizational skills to create the things. Like this year is a lot about work, but it's also about creating, I'm putting into motion new things. I'll be launching a few new things that I'm not really talking about a whole lot yet, but I will be when they're, you know, here, and including getting my first book written.
Absolutely.
That's a big deal. And to me, that would be, no matter how many copies it sells, I don't care. Just getting it written.
Right.
Of course, when I publish it, I'll probably be like, okay, now I care. I want to sell a lot of copies. I want people to read this thing. You know, but for me, it's just about getting it out there. Getting it, doing that work.
Mm-hmm.
That's, to me, is being a successful human being is about being success. It's not about money.
Yeah.
It's about how I feel. It's about how my relationships are. It's about how I'm, you know, how happy I am with what I'm doing. Those are important things to me.
And they're very important for people to recognize what, you know, what their definition of success is.
Yeah.
And so to be able to define it and not to beat themselves up if they haven't reached it, because putting like a set deadline, that just helps you to kind of keep going. But if you get to that deadline and if you haven't done anything, then you need to reevaluate whether that was really important to you to do or not.
Yeah.
But if you get there and you're shy of some of the things that you were trying to accomplish, that's okay. There's still tomorrow. You just keep moving forward and taking one step at a time and really concentrating on all the things that you have done. So, you know, and looking back, you can say, well, I'm creating content for the book, even if I haven't finished creating all of the content. And I do have my radio show, and I do have my clients, and I do have all of these things. So just continuing to be grateful for all of the things that you have done and continuing to look forward with excitement and anticipation. And you'll always be adding new things to your plate. I don't want to say to your plate, because that sounds like it's a lot to do, but adding more things that will bring you joy and fulfillment.
Yes.
So
definitely, because one of the things I do want to get back into is a little bit of art. And I've really been wanting to draw. I was never so much the drawer as the painter, but I've been wanting to draw, and there's all these great tools out there to play with. So to me, that will be, that's like going to be one of the things that's on the back burner right now.
Yeah. And it's okay to have it out there, but not have it front and center so that it's competing for your time and attention and taking away from the other things that you're trying to accomplish. Exactly. I know a lot of times people say, well, you should do this and you should do this. And it's, well, I got to focus on what I'm doing right now first. Yeah. And I want to do all of those things, but there's a time and a place for that. So that's great. What do you think are the skills and the strengths that you have that have enabled you to be successful?
I'm very determined, and I have a very optimistic outlook on things.
We were talking about that earlier.
Yeah. I'm pretty positive in how I see stuff. And I'm always, I can always put a spin. I would have made a great spin doctor. I can always put a spin on it. And it's not, you know, making it up, or although it is. It's we have this joke around our house, another year older, another day older, another day closer to making stuff up. And it's, I'm like, yeah, but that's part of creating spiritually. And I believe in that. I see the power of it, of a vision, imagining, creating, picturing. It's what I've done my whole life as an artist, and then now I'm doing that in my life in a different way. So my optimism is a big positive for me.
I think that's great. I can definitely see how that will help to contribute to you being successful. Because if you're constantly looking at the negative part, then you don't have that motivation to keep you going.
Yeah.
But as long as there's still hope and you have that optimistic view of what this can be and all of the things that you can accomplish and in all the ways that you can help others to find their balance, their center, their help them to relieve that stress, help them to look forward to the future. That's such a gift that you have that you're able to share with others. And as long as you're able to keep doing that, even if it's just one person, and knowing that, you know, each one person that you help, you know, it adds up.
And I'd say that humor is important. So even if you find yourself stuck in the negativity, like when I do, I'm like, okay, I got to find something funny about this. I've got to, not to make fun of it or make light of it or pretend it's not there, but there's always something funny.
Yeah.
When we take everything so seriously, then we get stuck, is what I've noticed for myself.
No, I think that's great advice, and good for everyone who's listening or will listen to this interview in the future to recognize that. I agree. You've talked about this before, and I was struck by your conversation. You came and spoke at one of my masterminds. And so if you don't remember exactly what you said, then I'll help remind you. And this isn't even the question, but gut instinct versus experience. Which is more important and why?
Gut instinct is usually an instant response. You know, like intuition, it's an instant response. You're not overthinking it. You're not basing it on something else. You're not weighing it against the past. You're not judging it. And it's something to listen to. It's very important. And it's really hard for us as people who consider ourselves rational beings. I'm going to go think a lot about that thing. We get stuck in doing that and trying to make sense of something rather than following gut instinct, which is, you know, it's actually a gift. So what I suggest to people, because I know sometimes it's like weaning yourself off of your chatter mind, you know, sort of weaning away from the, it must make sense, into the feeling. It's more about the feeling or being with it. Sometimes you need both. I don't think one replaces the other. I think that there's a balance that we in our Western society don't necessarily have yet. More and more people do. But some of the most successful people out there, including corporation leaders and CEOs, will say that they follow their intuition. And for whatever reason, I'm not judging it as good or bad, just saying, yep. They've learned how to. It is the most acceptable psychic ability, you know, on a societal level, to follow your gut, your nose, your intuition. That's important. If you don't do it, I'd say start following it and then validate it when it works.
So that's an important part, to validate it when it works, because
definitely,
that's what a lot of us don't do.
Yeah, we don't. We
don't recognize
we
it.
We judge ourselves when it isn't right. Mm-hmm. But there's always something in there, like paying attention. And rather than having the mind go, no, 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 that doesn't make sense. I'm just going to go do this thing because it makes sense, you know, which our minds do. And, you know, our minds are trying to keep us safe. It's all that. What is it? Seth Godin calls it the monkey mind. The lizard brain. He calls it the lizard brain.
And that's...
The lizard brain is the part of us back when we were lizards.
Okay.
That formed to keep us safe. Okay. You know, it's like fear. It's a fear base. And if we go into just thinking and forget to be and feel and intuit and have that, we have a whole other set of tools that we forget about when we don't listen to our gut instinct.
So I like that. Using your gut for the little things and then validating that this is working and how it worked. And then also still taking into account experience. So you're not saying... Get rid of experience, but just pulling that into the equation, and actually that probably plays a bigger part with gut instinct than we even realize anyway.
Yeah.
And what did you say? This is what I'm focusing on when you talked about gut instinct. How do you determine the difference whenever there's fear or your instinct? How do you know which one to listen to? And how do you not...
That's a tough one.
And how do you not know that the fear is your gut instinct?
Well, and what I've noticed about just speaking for me, my intuition, my gut instinct over the years, and it's gotten, you know, I've developed it more, but it is very quiet. It's sort of just off stage. It's kind of like just out there. It's not something you can explain or prove to anybody else. I say, you know... It's hard to tell the difference sometimes. Like if you have a feeling that says, oh, stay away from that person, that can be your gut instinct saying, I don't want to be near that person. And I was going to say, and add to this, your body will tell you. You know how sometimes you're around somebody and your body doesn't want to be around that person.
The body language.
Yeah. The way you feel, the way your body, learning to listen to the body and learning to listen within really helps you know the difference between what's just your mind going, no, 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 and what's your body. Now, here's another thing. I mean, that was actually what I learned in the psychic meditation class was grounding myself, working from non-judgment. All of a sudden, I had some tools to kind of tell the difference between what was kind of running over me and then where I really was getting the information. So meditation's a great way to start to build up these tools. You know, just having stillness and time where you're not going off into the phone or the computer or noise or other people. Stillness, getting to know yourself, and you'll know the difference more and more and more.
So you can build that skill. And so for those who are thinking, well, should I add this to my business or should I even launch a business, trying to just be still and listening to what you're saying, what your mind is saying to you, and not letting, because there's always going to be fear around launching a business. There's always going to be fear around doing something new.
Yeah.
And letting your mind just tell you whether that's really a valid fear or not, and being still and long enough to let your mind talk to you.
And when push comes to shove, I'm always all for listen to your heart. Follow your heart. If it makes no sense to anybody else, that's the hardest thing, is not so much what we do with to ourselves, but what other people say, no, because their fear comes in.
Sure.
And I'm not making them all wrong. It might be people who just really care about somebody and say, oh, that's gonna, you're gonna go broke and blah, blah, blah. And it goes into all this fear.
No,
rather than the following your heart. You have to follow your heart.
I agree. I tell a lot of people that it, just because the naysayers are out there, a lot of times they're operating out of their own fears and their own difficulties that they've had. And they're operating actually out of love because they don't want to see you, you know, make the same mistakes but they're not you.
Right.
You're you, and you know what you're capable of.
Yeah. So. I grew up with a father who had always had his own business. You know, we were never rich, and there was a lot of fear around it. And I don't know that he was necessarily a good businessman, but I learned at a young age, oh, you can do that just by watching.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, that the more you see more and more people, and I know you talk about this stuff, more and more people these days starting their own businesses because they don't want to work for a corporation.
Right.
They don't want to go work for a big mindless, you know, or soulless kind of environment. They want to do something that means something to them.
And because we're finding more and more, there's not a safety net, even with the big corporations or with anybody. There's no safety net.
There's no safety net. So what have I got to lose?
Right, exactly.
You know?
So I like that. I trusting your own intuition, your gut instinct, and there are other factors involved, but being able to trust that and listen to it. Who do you admire most as a business leader?
Oh my goodness, that's really tough. But I will tell you, I admire so many different people from all different walks of life. You know, performers. I really admire a lot of strong older women, as you can imagine. I really admire people, and I'm trying to, like, I could name names. I mean, I admire, for example, Elizabeth Warren. You know, I admire Seth Godin. Because he's a writer who shares, but he's also a business person. I admire all the artists and the musicians and everybody who has the nerve to get it out there. I admire Amanda Palmer. She's a musician. I admire just people who create.
He did a great TED Talk, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I admire so many of these people, and it's not like there's even just one. I'm always bringing in information, new information, and reading people and learning about business, but I learn about it from people across all levels.
So is there something common that you feel all of these particular leaders have?
Yes, they give. And there's a creativity, just a constant, like, bringing something new forward. And I don't mean like the new thing to buy, but new ideas. Like it's a positive moving forward. We really are creating a new economy, even if it doesn't look like it to a lot of people. But the entrepreneurs are the ones doing it. The people starting their own businesses and working for themselves.
I agree.
Yeah.
How do you unwind and unplug? Or do you?
I do. I mean, I meditate, or I'll go for, my favorite is to go for a walk with my husband, whether we go to Griffith Park or we live in a very hilly neighborhood. Watch movies, you know, read books, hang out with people and laugh. You know, I work a lot, but that's how I unwind.
Now, if you had a dream collaborator, who would that be?
A dream collaborator.
That you'd want to collaborate with on something.
Well, I do have a number of people I want to collaborate with, so I'm starting to look at that. But one of them, actually, I really do want to do some work with my husband. He's a really good actor, and he's a filmmaker, and he has all the tools and the skills to create some of the stuff I'm looking at moving forward. But there's other people too. I have a few friends. Kathleen Kagey's one.
Yeah.
My friend Susie Gardner. Just different people there are projects coming with these different people. So,
well, I can't wait to see what you have coming forward. I don't know if you want to share any of that.
I have a meditation site I'm creating. It's just about meditation. And I want to be doing a soft launch by the end of March. So I'm working on that.
Okay, we've put it out there.
We have. It's called My Meditation Nation.
I love it.
I already have it. I'm building the site, so we'll see.
That sounds absolutely fantastic. Are you doing that yourself?
I am, but I will have help at some point. But I have to own it right now. I have to really, like, I have to be the one whose energy is working it.
And how did you learn to do all of that stuff? Did you teach yourself?
Yeah, a lot of it. I'm a self-hosted WordPress user, so it's on WordPress. I've learned how to do all kinds of stuff over the years just by being a blogger. I've been a blogger since 2007. So just...
You got in when the... Well, I mean, you obviously had vision that, you know, this is a great way to share my voice.
I had no idea why I was doing it. I just knew that I wanted to. And then I realized, oh, now I know why. It's helping me find my new pictures, like create the new vision of what I want. So I do a lot of research and reading. I mean, I'm by no means as geeky as I could be. I'd like to be geekier. I'd like to learn how to code. That's one of my things I really like to, I'd like to learn that skill.
Wow, I'm impressed.
Coding is a good skill.
Yes, I think it would be a very, very good skill. And I'm impressed that you're not you're not afraid to take on that new challenge, you know, especially as we get older. I would say the majority, I think I can speak for the majority, you know, there's so many things changing immediately that you know, we just have to jump into it. But we're going to have to close our show here. I could keep talking to you forever. One piece of advice?
I'd say have fun.
All right. Well, all of you entrepreneurs out there, have fun. Thank you for listening to our show today. And thank you, Chris Cahill, a psychic every day.
Thank you, Jen. Thank you. I got